The following talk was given at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on January 11, 2026. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning. You know that really, really nice moment when you're in your bed and it's still warm? And you're laying there. And then one eye kind of pops open and you're thinking, wow, what's happening? And this happened to me this morning at about 1:15 a.m. And I opened my eye and I thought, what's going on? And I look around the room and I feel one of my cats is on top of me. And I know it's Jesse because Jesse's a chunk. He's a big boy. And then all of a sudden I thought to myself, oh, let's see, it's Sunday. What's happening today? Oh my God, I'm giving a talk. Well, talk about waking up real quick. I woke up real quick and haven't really been to sleep since. But it was interesting. So I was laying there and then when I suddenly realized, oh, I have some stuff I got to get done today. I could feel lots of changes. I could feel my heart race, right? I mean, I could definitely feel something. And then, as a person that has a history of anxiety, you know, I had that awful anxiety feeling where it's like this raw energy kind of in your body. It's kind of all over the place. I'm like, well, I got to get up. I guess I'm just going to get up. So I go upstairs, make a cup of coffee, get a nice big glass of water. And then I was sitting there at my desk just doing things to distract myself, right? And it was uncomfortable. I was sitting there just thinking, oh, God, I don't know. I don't know if I can do this. This was really wild, man. I'm like, well, it can't be that bad. Like, it'll be fine. And I could just see my mind going all over the place on different thoughts. And I could see how all these little stories I was putting together in my head, they were responding in my body. I was sitting there feeling pretty miserable for a while. Not horrible. But then my cat, George, the other cat, little small guy, he jumped up on my lap. And he kind of circled around a little bit. Laid down and just started purring. And then things kind of shifted a little bit. I'm like, okay. But it was very interesting just to be in that moment where you're kind of up against something which isn't something you want to necessarily reach out and grab, but there it is, right? When I was walking through the doorway arch over here to the altar and then sitting down, had other feelings that were coming up too. I was thinking, well, you know, these are people I care about and I like everybody and I've done public speaking before. It probably won't be a complete disaster. But again, I could feel stuff rising up. You know, I could feel emotions. I could sense my body doing different things, a little bit of that heart racing again. And it's just fascinating, right? Because now that I've been up here for a couple minutes, that went away, right? All these things kind of showed up. And then something brand new. And that's the thing that I find so interesting about this practice of meditation, of trying to be present, of trying to see what's really happening. Because you kind of start to realize that everything is just churning and showing up all the time, continuously all the time. And the things that we think are like, this is what I'm feeling and this is what I'm stuck with, it changes. Might not be instantaneous, but it's going to change. And I remember when I first started kind of exploring Buddhist thought and so forth, I heard a lot of things and I read some stuff and I took some classes and lots of new things. I'm just curious. I don't think anyone here is really brand new in the room from what I can see. Maybe a couple people back there. Anyone online? Are you anyone new or relatively new to Dharma Field? You can just raise your little hand there in the Zoom. I ask only because I remember when I first started coming here, I saw a lot of things that were pretty confusing to me, right? And that's just kind of the nature of anything. When you start to do something brand new, it's a lot of stuff to take in and process and think about and wonder about. And I found that there's a lot of wisdom in the things that I've learned. And I've also found a lot of interesting wisdom in just sitting. Zazen, right? I think what meditation has shown me over the years is how to truly get yourself positioned with just what's happening, good, bad, or otherwise. And I found that I've become pretty good at managing physical discomfort. Like if I'm in an extended meditation retreat, I'll get pain in my lower back, and I've learned how to just kind of slightly adjust. Little tricks, you can kind of breathe into it a little bit, just maybe move your body just a little bit. That's pretty cool, right? Because life is continuously showing up, and a lot of times the things that shows up isn't always that pleasant. And yet here we are. We're kind of here. There's no escaping here, right? Even when things are a little rough. I'll talk more about that in a little bit. But as I've been learning about different aspects of Buddhist thought and so forth, one thing I found very helpful to me, I'm sure a lot of you have heard about these, well, three or four marks of existence, right? Probably heard that. Kind of like these three or four, it depends on which list you're reading, but the marks of being alive, of being here. And I liked it so much that I tattooed it on my wrist. In Sanskrit, right? I think the one thing, and I hope you'll see where I'm going with all this, by the way, but the first word here is anicca, and that is the word for impermanence, anicca, right? I used to think that was a pretty scary concept, because like immediately you think about me, I don't want to be impermanent, but that would kind of stink. I hope that I'm not impermanent like too quickly. But then you start to realize it isn't a toggle. It's constantly changing, right? And I think nowadays, anicca, impermanence, feels actually a little comforting. When like Monday morning rolls around and you say to yourself, ah, it's a fresh week. Great. Let's think about what I'm going to do this week. Or even like a couple of weeks ago, right? First of the year, January 1st. Hey, brand new year. Let's see what's going on. Let's make some resolutions. I think seeing how impermanence is just constant, it's like having that opportunity of feeling kind of like renewed all the time. It's like, wow. Things are brand new. They look pretty darn close, but think about this right here, right? I've been speaking for just a few minutes, and you've all been sitting in the same places, and not really much in the room has shifted or changed as far as I can tell. And yet, it has been this constantly churning new experience. Think about all the things that had to happen for this little morning with me talking up here. Think of all the things that had to happen for that to occur. I mean, every single one of us had to eventually wake up and get out of bed. Hopefully not at 1:15 in the morning. That had to happen. Cars had to start. Maybe a bus ride was taken. Maybe someone walked, right? All of that needed to happen for this to happen right here. And when you think about just that much, you can play those games. I mean, they're not silly games. I mean, when you really kind of think about how everything just connects with each other, it's pretty amazing. When I think about everybody in this room, including me, we all had birth parents. If that didn't happen, we wouldn't be here. If you weren't here, this talk wouldn't be happening the same way. Maybe half of you were here and half of you weren't here, but I was still here. Totally different talk. Totally different experience. And that's really cool. You know, I think it's that feeling of, wow. It makes it seem a little more intimate. Like, it makes it seem to me that there is always this wonderful opportunity to just kind of reset yourself and approach what's happening right now. And that's where those teachings, I think, can be so helpful, like the marks of existence, you know, Four Noble Truths, Eightfold Path, all the precepts. I found them to be very, very, very practical. And that's definitely what drew me to Buddhism to begin with. I really wanted some sort of practice, some sort of philosophical construct, something that really addressed what's really going on right now. I didn't want the big thoughts about the way infinite future. I wanted to know about what's going on here and how in the world can I possibly work with what I see? You know, every day there's something that comes up that we have to work with. And so I found that being to a point where you're just kind of calm, looking at what's happening and trying to just not be so reactive. And trust me, I'm not saying I'm great at it. I have plenty of times every single day when I find myself overreacting, right? But at least now I realize I have a choice. It's not just that I'm on a runaway train that I have zero control over. I can still be aware and try to do something which will maybe not put out so much extra ripples. You know, that's kind of the way I try to see it. So I mentioned a little bit earlier, I was saying if anyone was new, and I just mentioned about when I first started checking out Buddhism, there was so many new things. And this guy right here was a mystery for a long time for me. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about this guy called Arakasu. Okay. Now, I remember when I first saw people wearing Arakasu, I think I was checking out Clouds and Water. This was like 20 something years ago, I think. I was trying to find a Zen center that I felt connected to and I wanted to kind of establish a home base with, right? So I was checking out all these different places around the cities. And I saw people wearing things like this, and I thought to myself, oh, they must be really special. They must be like the really good Buddhists, right? They must be like special Buddhists. And I'm just going to show you this one too. I remembered when I was sitting there at Clouds and Water. Remember, brand new, right? I was sitting there and all of a sudden I saw people doing this. And they would say, great robe of liberation, virtuous field far beyond form and emptiness, wearing the Tathagata's teaching is the vow to save all sentient beings. I'm like, no idea what you just said, A. And B, why is it on your head? Well, when I was sewing this thing with my sewing teacher, I kind of got some of the backstory. And I want everyone to know there's nothing magical about sewing a rakusu. It's not like somebody came over to me and said, ah, young Andrew, you have now reached the point where you can sew a rakusu, right? No, wasn't like that at all. Anyone can sew a rakusu. Probably want to talk to a teacher about it. But the idea here is it's a commitment of your practice. And when I was sewing this little guy, so first of all, I've never sewn anything in my life. Maybe a button in college, which I probably had to call my mom to ask her how to do it. What I received was this bag of cloth and a bunch of thread and a couple of needles. I'm like, oh, there's really no starting point here. What in the world is going on with all this? I had a really good teacher, and it was a love-hate relationship. There were definitely days when I hated the entire thing. It's like, man, I'm doing an awful job at this. And I really was trying, you know. but I'd get the wrong stitch, or oh, a couple times were really great. I actually poked my finger and it had blood that went on the white part of my fabric. So I had to deal with that. But you know what was really cool? By the time it was all done, and it was many months of, and not like I was sewing for 8 hours a day for months. It wasn't like that. It was like something you pick up when you can. But I started to realize that this little guy here is actually a really excellent snapshot of my brain on where I was, right? Like, I wish I could show this like in an overhead projector right now so I could show you this, but you'll have to take my word for it. I can see which part was it? Ah, yeah. I can see a certain area of stitching here. And you know, you're trying to make the lines fairly, you know, symmetrical and evenly spaced when you're sewing. And there was this one chunk, it was probably like 3 or 4 inches, and it was just kind of like this. And I didn't even notice until I was merrily along way over here. And I suddenly looked and I'm like, oh my gosh. And I talked to my sewing teacher and I'm like, he looks at me and he goes, what was going on there? And I started to realize, oh, I think I remember I was really not paying attention. And I was just kind of quickly trying to get this done because I was getting so frustrated that I was behind, right? Well, that's kind of part of this now. I look over here and unfortunately I got to fix this one day, but there's all these little folds you have to make and you have to iron things very carefully. And then you have to like do these certain stitches to hide the stitch. And somehow I didn't fold this part of the fabric correctly. So there's like an extra lip, right? And when I saw myself doing this, I used to get pretty frustrated with myself. Like, oh man, messed up the rakusu again. Nah, not really. I mean, it is what it is, right? And now that I see it, it's actually kind of cool. It's very, imperfect. There's plenty of flaws, right? But at least it kind of is a good snapshot of practice, right? I was there. It was a practice. I had to pick it up, work with it, stumble with it, gnash my teeth with it. The Joros, oh. Remember the Joros, Brian and Kaylee? Those are tough. Those are tough to get on there. And I think the creme de la creme for my rakusu is I had somebody here at Dharma Field say, oh, I see you have this little extra colored patch right here. What's that all about? And again, the thought was, oh, is this like a special extra powerful rakusu? Well, no. I left the iron on top of it and I burned it. But again, it is a perfect example of, I think, this came into being from a lot of work. And Kaylee even was part of my rakusu because I was unable to completely finish sewing my case because I was behind. She offered to sew the whole thing for me, which is just awesome. So thank you. Right? So back to my little tattoos. Maybe before I do that though, let me just take a drink of water. Any comments right now? Or are you just all kind of wondering what in the world is he going to do with this? Back to my tattoos then. So I said Anicca, right? Impermanence. Well, then there's this guy here. Now, if I was going to pronounce it in the real official Sanskrit way, I would say Dukkha. Dukkha. But we just say Dukkha, right? So Dukkha is another mark of existence. And I think it was last Sunday when Jed was speaking. I was Doan and Steve Matuzak just happened to say, oh, I remember something your son said one day about Dukkha. So Dukkha is a term that's just kind of trying to capture that underlying grind, that tugging, the pushing, the pulling, the tugging, that kind of flavor of just an underlying unease, even in the good times, right? And my son said, he was very, very young, Right. I used to bring him here at Dharma Field when he was quite young. And he just said, you know, Dan, sometimes dukkha can be really, really heavy. And sometimes it's really funny. And I thought that was really great. I gave a couple of very quick stories about some dukkha that I was experiencing my 1:15 a.m. wake up call, right? Talked about how I came into the Zendo watching what was coming up in my head, how I was responding to it. Those are the funny ones, I suppose, right? Those are pretty lightweight things. I mean, it wasn't fun. Who wants to be up at 1:15, you know, with your eyes like deer in the headlights? Not fun, but not a huge deal, right? Definitely tolerable, definitely able to get things done. But dukkha can also be heavy. And had a couple of heavy things happen this week. On Monday, we unfortunately had to put our dog to sleep. Very sad. He was a super good dog. But he was in a lot of pain, a lot of pain, spinal problems. We think he had, believe it or not, doggy dementia, right? And it was Monday, and he had been having a little bit of a struggle for a couple days. And Monday morning, talked to my wife. I'm like, I'm calling the vet. We got to get this guy in. This is not looking good. And I just had that sinking feeling. Like, oh, I think we're going to have to say goodbye to the dog today. Didn't want to say it out loud, but I just kind of had this understanding that it would be cruel to keep our dog in this condition, right? So Mandy and I, my wife Mandy and I, we took the day off work, and we were able to try to calm him down, but he was in such pain, the poor guy. He would just be spinning in circles, and he couldn't get comfortable, and he'd be whining and yelling and yelping, and he'd kind of confusingly go to each room trying to find us. And I was running around the different drugstores looking for doggy codeine that the veterinary, you know, gave a prescription for. And there it was again, right? You're up against something. And you're like, okay. And I remember I had this little habit where every morning I take up my little tablet and I write down my to-dos for the day, like goals. And some of them are work related, some of them are personal. And that morning, the only thing I was able to write down was be present for Frazier, the dog. You know, take care of what's happening right now. And it sucked. Didn't want to be there. Really liked my dog, right? But what do you do? That's what happened. That this was what was appearing. This is what was showing up. That impermanence was very obvious that day. The dukkha was pretty obvious that day. You know? That's a heavier one, right? And goodness gracious, I have had so many events with friends and family over this last year. Very close friend of mine, married for a very long time. It just stopped out of nowhere, you know? That's dukkha. That's impermanence. That's something to have to think about. Friend of mine here at Dharma Field, his spouse was attacked, taking a walk. That's dukkha. That's heavy. So then you think to yourself, okay, when these kinds of things pop up, and it's not just a 1:15 in the morning, boy, I'm awake right now. It's the real deal, right? It's not as if when I was working with the situation with our dog that I was actively recalling, oh, yes, the third precept says I need to do X, Y, and Z. And, oh, yes, I remember now I should really have good right intention and make sure that I'm doing it this way. No. But I was present. I was able to just be like, we got to take care of this. And I think that's what this practice over the years has kind of That's why I find it useful, right? Buddhism is not about finding a perfect little world. Even though one of the little marks of existence is nirvana, it doesn't mean perfect. It doesn't mean never have a problem. It doesn't mean everything's hunky-dory all the time. Also this week, of course, we had a very, very, very disturbing episode happen here in our community, right? A woman, Renee Good, was shot 3 times, dead. That's heavy. And all of the people that have their opinions about on what happened and what didn't happen, it just adds to the chaos. So here's another example of here we are, right? Maybe we don't want to be here, but we're here. And it seems like the best we can do, whether dukkha is funny or heavy, is be present. To be present and to use these good teachings and to use this ability to be aware. You know, awareness for awareness sakes, as Norm would tell us. Really, I think that is just one way that we can try to, like I always say, not cause so many ripples, right? Is there a way that we can live where we're not just like slapping around in the water and making waves and chaotic gestures and causing more dukkha when there's already plenty here? But the good thing is, though, it isn't all heavy, right? I mean, there are plenty of things that are just wonderful. And there are plenty of things that are pretty rough. And I'm grateful for this community because I know I can come here for some solace, right? And see people I care about. And we can work with this together. And we can support each other with our practice. And we can try to be calmer and not so impatient. And believe me, I'm very impatient. But again, Buddhism is not about being perfect. It's not about, it's not a binary switch. It's not like now that I've sewn a rakusu, I'm like, oh yeah, man, I'm so peaceful right now. Everything is great all the time. It's not true. But I like it. You know, it all came together. Well, I think that's all I wanted to say this morning. But I would love to hear if you guys have anything to say. Yeah, David?
So a lot of written on this one. There was right along with your phone. And it was a stand-up comedian who had fallen into depression. Nothing was funny. And then he figured out that the way to get out of that is to be where he was and be able to notice what is going on. And he recounted the experience of another friend who'd had a terrible loss and had buried somebody that he loved. And he was settling up the bill with a funeral home. And the bill said, "Thank you for your patronage. We hope we see you again soon."
Oh.
And he said, "What?" Oh. And then he realized how funny it was. Oh. And it broke him right out of his misery. You know?
Wow.
And the guy said, "It's like when you go into a friend's bathroom, they use their bathroom at their house. And you've never been there before. And, you know, you go into your own bathroom, you don't even look at what you're doing.
Right.
It's all been there before, and you know what it is. But in a prince bathroom that you've never seen before, you see which way their toilet paper goes.
Oh, yes.
You see the books that are sitting on the back of the toilet, and maybe some of them have gotten wet and they're dried out, and all this kind of stuff. You're just looking because it's all new."
Yeah.
Well, it's always all new.
Right.
And it's frequently funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Thinking of that, I think it was Mandy showed me this little funny cartoon about which way you're supposed to put in the toilet paper. I thought it was awesome. It said, beards are cool, mullets are not. Obviously, I'm pro-beard. Thanks, David. Anyone else have anything they'd like to comment on or share? All right. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.